everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Home Practice with Hallie. I'm your host, Hallie Miraglada, here with the mission to make the tools of yoga more accessible to all bodies, no matter where in the world you make your home. Today's episode is an interview with the founder of Citizen Yoga, Casey Must. Casey, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Hallie. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to share and talk and converse.
Yes, there's actually a lot I feel like that I want to talk to you about today. You founded Citizen Yoga in 2013 with one studio in Detroit, and your business has grown a lot. You have three studios in Michigan and one in Cleveland. And for the last 9 months, you've steered your company through a global pandemic.
Yes.
So take us through your journey a little bit.
My journey is sort of windy, and truthfully, I never thought that I would end up owning a yoga studio. Even more so, I never thought I would be a yoga teacher. And so this was not in my playbook at all. I think that when I sort of took my own sort of seeking spiritual path, that looked a little messy, definitely a lot kooky, and all of these things that, you know, didn't make sense to somebody looking from the outside in. I didn't really have an intention of ending up here. And then, you know, it's sort of like Dharma grabs a hold of you, like by your shoulders, and is like, go this way. Yeah. Like, let me like take you. Like, I'm gonna grab you and you're gonna go this way. And I often describe my first time ever teaching a yoga class as like a breath of fresh air. Like, oh, mm-hmm. This is what I was designed to do, to teach, to talk, to share, to connect.
What was the journey to becoming, I guess, a yoga practitioner first? How did you find your way into your yoga practice?
Yeah, I think my mine is a little different than a lot. I think a lot of people that I know come into yoga sort of at this like life moment of like, I don't know who I am. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, help me. And my journey was really different. I was sort of forced into class with my mom and my three sisters at the age of 10. And my little sister, it could have been even younger, but my little sister was 8. And then my sister above me was 12. And then our oldest sister, she was 14. And my uncle. And there were 7 people in the class. The room was carpeted. You know, we were this weird family 26 years ago. And we went as like a family activity. Mm-hmm. And slowly over time, it became this, you know, little rectangle of therapy. It's like laying on your own lily pad and looking at the world and trying to digest the ups and downs of teenage life, of college life, of, you know, I have all these memories of all these different teachers that I have met through the decades. And that's sort of how we stepped into yoga. And I never really thought it was going to have such a deep impact. But something that I think is different about yoga than anything else is I did a lot of traveling. And back then, you know, I sound so old. Back then, you know, when you travel in Southeast Asia, it wasn't really appropriate to run outside or be in shorts. And so yoga became this little home wherever I was in the world. Mm-hmm. And I was in hostels and I would just like lay my mat down. I'm sure it was so weird to people back then, and practice and move my body and breathe and remind myself that I was okay. So I think that it's always been that deep. It evolved into a deep spiritual practice, but more so a deep therapy practice for me.
And then how did you come to start a yoga business? What was the motivation to take that personal passion and make it something on such a bigger scale?
One thing I will say is that I think that the worst reason to open a yoga studio is that you love teaching yoga.
Probably true.
Yeah, I think that if that would be the advice that I could give to people, like, that these are two very different roles. They're two very different hats. They're not the same thing. And I think that that's where people get tripped up. They get confused. And then, you know, you might fall out of love with yoga as an owner. You might fall deeper in love, which is sort of what happened to me. I always thought that I would own the business and teach less. And what I have found over the years is that I want to teach more. But it was really a decision to build. There are so many reasons. One is teaching an intelligent, educated practice. I grew up in flow yoga culture. No insult. It just is what it is. I was taught as a child to flow how you feel. And when I moved to India, so I studied Vedanta in India for 3 years at an academy. It was very strict. It was not yoga based. We studied a lot. And once I delved deep, truly deep into the philosophy of yoga, there's so much about how your mind, which is your child, is preferential. It moves towards what it likes and it dislikes. And that really, one, shrinks your world. And two, it creates a deeper experience of pairs of opposites for you, which creates more suffering. And so just this idea of flow how you feel, do what's right for you, it really is actually against philosophy, the spiritual philosophy of yoga, which is, you know, measure up, find an objective higher ideal, think beyond yourself, align yourself with your body, your mind, and your intellect, and then think of like how you fit the whole, not how you fit you. Not, I don't mean you individually, but you as just being a preference. So that was like one thing that in Detroit, there was just flow how you feel yoga. And again, that's not an insult. That's just where it all began. And so that we had a few teachers, one particularly, her name's Ann Fancy. She's excellent. If you ever come to our studio, you should definitely go to her class. She has her own style. She's just so sweet and tells really funny stories. And, you know, we're very different teachers in some ways and very similar teachers. And she just said, like, can you just make a studio? I'm like, oh, God. I think I got, like, duped into it. But the other thing is that I went through our mission for Citizen Yoga is suicide prevention and mental health. My sister passed away from suicide in 2007. And that's really, I was already on the spiritual journey, but that really pushed me into this deep investigation of why do we all suffer so much? Like, what is this suffering? Is there an opportunity to actually liberate from it? And what does that look like? And how do I do that? And so I think as a young person, I confronted a lot of life questions, my own contemplation of suicide, my own depression, my own anxiety. And I moved home thinking, oh, I went to India, I'll come home and everything will be fine. And the truth is that everything was much worse. That when you really study philosophy, the world becomes so outrageous to you. Like, it's literally like, especially right now, like the world is so outrageous. I can't even digest it, honestly. It like turns my stomach how mind-led and sort of conspiracy theory and believing Instagram and Facebook as news. And I can't even like use an intellect, think for yourself. And when you come home and you sort of see how we're living so disconnected and where is a community? And that for me was really dark. I went through a very dark period of my life, probably the darkest period of my life. And this was before I opened. And then one day, I don't know, the thought literally came from the universe through my head, down my soul, and was like, I need to open a studio. And I'm like, huh? What? So that's sort of how it all began, and the vision of really having a genuine community where people feel seen and I know your name and you're not just like a number in a room and I'm not some kind of like yoga celebrity, you know, trying to make it in this yoga land and feel important. It was just like, I'm a real person, I've done a lot of study and I care about this practice and I also care a lot about you.
Yeah, definitely a very strong mission. I've been to your Cleveland and your couple of your Detroit studios, and I know I felt that the moment I walked in the door. I also take your on-demand classes all the time now, so I've been really enjoying your classes. And something I've really admired in your classes is your ability to kind of bring philosophical concepts down to the ground and really anchor.
I love
really
that.
Move beyond the spiritual, like, jargon and really make it a spiritual practice. Do you have anything else you want to share about that?
Oh my God. Yes. I think, oh my gosh, I have so much to say about that. I think that, well, one, I'm obsessed with philosophy, but practical application of philosophy. And I really learned that from my teacher, Swami Parthasarathy in India. And again, I just want to remind everybody listening, like everything can become dogmatic. Like, so even a school of philosophy that tells you to question everything, like you have to take everything with a grain of salt and examine it. So even when I'm teaching philosophy with people, it's not here's right and here is wrong. This is a discussion so we can turn knowledge and churn knowledge around. And to me, practice without theory, moving your body without meaning, and like a self-reflective like fragrance, it becomes a, honestly, I think, a meaningless practice. And so I've worked so many years now learning how to put the, I don't even want to say message, because it's deeper than a message. But again, words are limited, especially in the English language, like theme or message, you know, that's so surface to what we're trying to do, which is to teach poses that are to the subtle body, teach theming that's to the subtle body, and really help create a container for you to go inward and listen to your own narrative. And when the class is about me and there's no philosophy, me being the teacher, and there's no philosophy, true philosophy, then you're just moving, which is okay. It's just different. And so I found that learning about the basic tools, you have a body, it moves. You have a mind that reacts. You have an intellect that directs. Like that could just be, oh, I don't just have this black box on my head. And the other part is, in a lot of spiritual jargon, it always goes body, mind, spirit, and they miss the intellect, which in traditional philosophy is the Vijna Maya Kosha, which is the thing that is the closest or the most subtle to your causal body, which is sort of like the seed of that individual you. And so if you skip and you just think that you're a mind, then all you are is a reaction instead of a direction. And so what we're hoping is that you cultivate all these things. So when we talk about an alignment-based practice at Citizen, we're not just talking about here are your feet and here are your hips and here are your legs and here are your arms and it needs to be perfect. It's like not like that. It's how well do you align your greater thought with your heart, with your body, and do you do that well? Like, do you measure up to what a higher ideal is? And what the asana practice is doing is it's hopefully helping you assess that for yourself and then adjust as you need.
In your yoga for irritability class, I've taken approximately 4 dozen.
Oh my God. I'm on a mission right now, Hal, I'm taking requests.
Can I have a series of irritable yoga classes?
Yes. Okay. I'm going to do irritability. Yeah. I'll do like, I am stuck.
Yeah.
I am stuck class. I want to do all mood. I'm going to do all mood and mood management classes. I'm working on a series for that right now to release. Well, I have to tell you, when I taught that class, I was so irritable. And I like was literally like, well, how do I practice when I'm irritable? And part of irritability, especially in Chinese medicine, is like feeling stuck, like the liver and the gallbladder channels are stuck. And so there's a lot of crossing of the legs. There's a lot of stretching of the outer hip and you're trying to get that channel to move. And so I always giggle because our acupuncturist, Alex, she was filming me. She was like, God, you're really irritable. And I was like, see, it's perfect class for me to teach right now.
I was going to say that in that class, you said something that I have been just reflecting on constantly. You said that irritability is caused by like a lack of vision and envisioning. And I think about that when you're talking about like, you, like mission and having this clear idea of kind of who you are and what you're doing and how you're moving through everything, you know, even the goals of the physical practice. How do you personally hold yourself accountable to having a vision? What do you do to hone your vision?
Well, I will tell you that this has been, 2020 has been like the loss of my vision for a while. Which is why it was so interesting to me as well. I'm a very like vision oriented person. I'm very growth oriented. And so 2020 sort of flipped me upside down. And I felt like, I started having like eye problems. Like, honestly, like I was like starting to wear my glasses again. And I was like, whoa, my vision is stuck. Like, what can I see out there for myself? What can I see to create in the world as a bigger platform for citizen yoga and what we've been doing? And 2020, I think for me, it was that lack of connection in that right eye that was just like, oh, I can't see into the future. I can't see my reactions. My memories are too strong. My left eye is like the joy, the vision of joy, and like what's out there for me. Oh, it felt like nothing. And so, honestly, this 2020 has been a deep dive of how do you recover your vision in a very stressful time. And that to me is the journey of, a spiritual seeker is reminding yourself in, within the ebb and flow of deep tidal waves this year. What is my purpose? I mean, that to me is answering the question as if you're listening, like, not just like, what is like, why? Like, I always ask the question, Hal, and we can do this exercise of like, why are you doing this? Like, you got to get to more of the why. And people say that a lot, but you will feel more connected. And so what I have had to do is honestly try everything. I tried everything this year. I got into Katona yoga, which is a different sort of school of yoga, which was more of a narrative, more of an embodied theory. I love Chinese medicine, so that has been really, really amazing to me. I studied a lot more. I led more philosophy classes because to me, when we're learning philosophy, there's something that changes in the brain. And I can't remember where I heard this. It might have been on one of Joe Rogan's podcasts, but there is something that happens in the brain when you read knowledge that reminds you of your purpose and your chemistry changes. And so it's not just how do you better your business? It's like where do I fit in this world and what is my specific purpose? And how do I align that with something that's greater than just me? And that to me is the question that I ask myself a lot. Why am I doing this? And the other thing I would say is just showing up. I would say the biggest lesson of entrepreneurship is accountability and the power of consistency. See, what I manage a lot of people, and the most powerful people are the people who are most consistent. There's no, if you're a yoga teacher, there is no, yes, you have to become educated. And most importantly, you have to learn to become yourself in the seat of the teacher. And that's a journey, of a lot of knowledge digestion and reflection and work. But the most important thing is just showing up all the time and being consistent. And that is one of the hardest things to do in a time like this when, some of your advocates in your life, like your parents or your friends, I'm tired. Okay, you should just take the day off. And I'm not saying like I can tend towards workaholic tendencies. I will admit that. But you will, if you're doing actions that align with your higher ideal, after the action is complete, no matter how much your mind sort of throws a mental temper tantrum, you will feel like that breath of fresh air. And so I think that that's what I stood on this year is just showing up no matter what and being consistent. And it will, one day my vision would clear, and I knew that.
And there's definitely been a lot of opportunities for doing that deep dive. I mean, even like personally, for in 2020, I think everyone certainly has had struggles, but the yoga industry has had a lot of transformations this year. What do you think have been some of the most significant struggles or reckonings at Citizen Yoga?
Oh, I went through a lot. I really, honestly, it's in some ways it's hard. It was hard. It's hard for me to talk about some of them. The one thing that I think was really profound is it kept the people who really believe in our mission with us. Like people who teach with us because of our values, not because of our opportunity. Because citizen can be an opportunity for people, and people who have still stuck with us, which I would say is 97% of our team. Mm-hmm. People really stuck with us because of our values and what we stand for. And, you know, again, I think that that's one of the most difficult things to realize as a business owner in any industry, is that a lot of people are there because you're an opportunity, even though you want to believe that everybody's there because of all of these amazing things that you might do for them. Or, you know, it's a lot of times it's opportunity because that's what our country is built on. We can't help that. I don't blame people. I understand. And so I think that that was a definite reckoning of acknowledging that part. And I realized that I had to get stronger in no matter what happens, like my values are clear and consistently realign and the right people will be here. So that was one for sure. My heart can hurt sometimes because I believe so deeply in people. The resurgence of Black Lives Matter, I think I have talked about it a lot on our podcast. But I still feel, I woke up in a way that I had never woken up before. A lot of days of deep crying, realizing that as inclusive as Citizen was, there was some work that we really had to do and still have to do. And that like deep feeling of, oh my God, like this is, people are in pain and I'm also in pain because of what I represent and how do I manage that? And I'm still a good person, even though I represent a history of, you know, negative action towards others. And so I think that in the yoga industry, it wasn't about doing the right thing in that moment, because I think that that's what everybody did. It's doing the right thing now. Like when all the dust is settled, what are you still doing? And I consistently think about it. There's this incredible author who I would never call her a student of ours because she's like a teacher of ours, but she doesn't teach for us. But she does come to our studios when she's in Michigan, Dr. Gail Parker. And she wrote a book recently released. And I had been talking to her about this prior to the resurgence of Black Lives Matter, just how can Citizen be more inclusive. And actually, one of the things she said was, Casey, have more representation at your front desk. It's that simple. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. Like, oh, that, thank you. Like, that was such a duh moment, you know? Like, yeah. Obviously. And she wrote a book called Healing. I don't want to mess this up. It's actually on my bookshelf. I should probably just walk into my other room, but I don't want to get up. Healing Racial and Ethnic Trauma Through Restorative Yoga. So if anybody's listening, should definitely check out that book. We added it into our 200-hour training. And she talks about her journey as a Black woman in the yoga world. And she's, you know, I have always told her since the day we opened, and I've known her for a long time. I was like, you float. I always, whenever I see her in public, I'm like, Gail, you're beautiful. You just float around. Like, she's like a magical woman. So that was a reckoning that I still am reckoning. Yeah. That's a reckoning that I'm still reckoning, and a healing that I can still feel it, like on my throat, in my heart. Like, what if I say the wrong thing? I was so afraid to speak, which maybe was an okay thing for me because I've never been afraid to speak. And yeah, like how do we deeply change Citizen? And I think the answer is over time and with a lot of conscious effort. I'm not responsible for the whole yoga industry. I'm responsible for my team and what we do. And yeah, that was a huge COVID. Learning over this time. And the last one I would say is, you know, just that there is an end to everything. And we created an on-demand platform in a time that we thought we weren't going to create anything. And, you know, there's a quote I use often. Maybe sounds a little trite, so I apologize if it's a little trite, but I used to use it when I lived in India, when it was very hard. And It wasn't glorious and it wasn't glamorous. It wasn't any of those things. It was just hard most of the time. Faith is the bird who feels the light and sings while the dawn is still dark. And I think that is the quote for me that will describe 2020 in the best way.
Definitely. Your on-demand platform, was it directly a response to COVID, or was it something that you had been planning previously?
It was 100% a response to COVID, and not in the way that people would think. So I was against an on-demand platform. I like hate even admitting that. Some business guy that was like trying to partner with us a while ago was like, hey, you should really start an on-demand platform. And I was like, no, we are a suicide prevention company. I need to see humans in front of me so I can impact their heart and remind them that they are important. So I was like, we are not doing an on-demand platform. Thank you so much for your bad idea. See you later, sir. Like, it's like, all right, foot in mouth. If only we had done that. Like, great.
The universe hears and is like, haha, I have a funny joke for you.
Exactly. And so, you know, actually, I created it because, one, I think everybody needs mental health help, including myself. We need therapy. It's very intimidating to go to therapy. Therapy is very expensive. My bigger, higher ideal is to create a charity or a nonprofit, that sort of like funds mental health help for people. So that's like sort of like long down the road one day. And the point was actually for my staff. Is I realized that yoga is not it. That is it. You cannot just do yoga to help your mind. That's nice as a thought. And if you believe that, I'm sorry if I just popped your bubble, but it is part of your mental health journey. It is not your mental health journey. And I think that I saw in so many people that I manage and people that I was connected to, the deep struggles and fears and like, okay, I'm going to yoga or I can't get on my mat because I'm so anxious. And all these parameters that we put on ourselves about how we practice yoga, like our demand platform on demand has like 10 minute classes, 15 minute classes. When you're mentally disturbed, there is no way you can hold your mind for an hour, especially when you're by yourself. Like that's why you go into a studio so you can be held, so you can measure up, so you can perform. And I don't mean performative. I mean like, you're there to be held by the teachings and the boundaries of that teacher, and your ego and your mind is like, okay, how am I doing in my yoga practice? When you're at home, it's like, does it matter? How well am I doing in my inner world, not my outer world? And so I actually, my first thought was, let's start a telehealth business. And everybody was like, no, you crazy person. This is a horrible idea that you have. This is too many logistics. And I don't know how I thought to start recording therapists. And it wasn't just guided meditation, because honestly, I think guided meditation is just like, it's nidra and it's relaxing, but it's not, traditionally, it's not meditation. Iyengar says it, Swamiji says it, the Gita says it. What we call meditation in the West is just mindfulness. So I knew we needed mindfulness on there. We have some employees that that used to work for us that now don't. Mary Beth, she, Menino, she does breath work on there. And we're collecting, Blend Health is our therapy group, but we're collecting more. We're going to have more life coaches on there. And really, I don't need to, what I realized is, let me just be the bridge. I don't need to be the hand holder. Like, I don't need to run another business. Let me just introduce people to these therapists, to these modalities, and then let them take their mental health in their own hands. And the therapists that are working on our platform, they're giving people free sessions if they're from our platform and discounts. And so to me, it closed the loop of Citizen being this incredible community, being a yoga community of like educated but different teachers. And all of a sudden we like fulfilled our mission in a way that I really did not want to do. Like, oh, now I can be a true mental health resource to people in a way that I I wasn't before. And so this to me was such a beautiful completion of our sort of 360 degree journey to mental health.
It really is incredible. And it, you know, something that I have found as a byproduct of this kind of COVID time is that I get to take classes with all these favorite teachers of mine who are all over the country. Like, even just the ability to reach people who are outside of your geographical area is huge for studios. Do you see the on-demand platform as being a permanent part of your business plan now?
Oh my God. So, there's so many things I could say about this. I was actually just in a class with Alex Sherry. She's a Katona teacher out of New York this morning. And I was thinking, wow, like, oh, my windows are open. And like, I think yoga, the industry has been so exclusive within teacher to teacher, studio to studio. Oh, I couldn't even tell you how much I believe in that. Like, I've tried to fight against that toxic nature. In Michigan, I put together a group of fitness owners and yoga studio owners who I think really live the values of yoga. And we go to dinner together to support each other. And it's really one of the hardest things for me as a teacher, and I'm sure other people, are when students move. I mean, one of our students moved during COVID. She moved to Berlin with her husband and her daughter. And we stood on the sidewalk, like, I mean, hysterically crying. Like, it was just like such a mush puddle of like, oh my God, like, you have been in my life for these years. And Citizen was so transformative to her. She had lupus, and her story is really incredible. And there's so many aspects to her story that I actually shouldn't reveal, but she, I'm like, it's okay. You're not losing me now. Like, so like, to me, like, we have people in Israel who took our teacher training, in Canada, in LA, in Idaho, in Chicago. And so all these people and citizens all across the world who've come in contact with our studio, or maybe haven't and now will, we can like be there with them, and I can talk to them, and I can see all these people who I love so much, like, every week. And I don't have to lose them because of just a mere physical space. And on demand will stay. I mean, that's the whole point of it, is that it's a supplement to your yoga journey. It's not your full yoga journey. And it's going to be an app in January. So it'll be really, really accessible. And like, lastly, all of my philosophy classes will be on it. And so people have been listening to them as podcasts. And so I think, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was trying to say, like, it is so kind of fortuitous in some ways that so many people have had to adjust to digital, because I think it's removed a lot of the barriers to knowledge and wellness and just like different viewpoints and different teachers. And, you know, I feel very lucky that I get to take your philosophy classes now, you know. Certainly that wasn't happening before. You mentioned that you might be interested in guiding us through a few reflective questions on uncovering or defining personal mission. Would you be interested to do that now?
Yeah, I would love to. Cool.
cool. Should I get my notebook?
Yeah, get your notebook, Hal. Okay. Yeah, get your notebook. I'm opening my notebook.
Okay. Listeners, grab your notebooks and a pen.
Yeah. I love that. I think that one of the things that I do in teacher training is to really help people define why they teach. So there are a few things I would love to take you through. The first is understanding the difference between Swadharma and Paradharma, which is very basic. It's very easy. And I don't think that we really do this. Because before you define your purpose, you have to understand sort of what's your personal flavor. Like, my personal flavor is different than your personal flavor. And you have to get good with that, because you're not just the universe. You don't remember that you're just the universe. You are this orange seed that has to be an orange tree. You're an apple seed that has to be an apple seed. And if you don't know that you're an apple seed and you try to be an orange tree, you know, you go through that life confusion. And I always give the example of one of my closest friends. She's a doctor, retina specialist, but she really wanted to be an architect. And the reason she's a retina specialist is because her dad's a retina specialist. And still to this day, we've been best friends since we were 10. We'll be on like a walk and she's like, you know, if I was an architect, I would have blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yeah. So there are a lot of us that, you know, take paths that we felt were designed for us, but with more internal looking, you can refine that path or you realize that it wasn't right for you. And then you can sort of like, as a lot of yoga people do, when they come to yoga, they bust through the doors of their unconscious and say, holy crap, I've been living a life that I didn't even want to live. And I think that that's what a lot, like the physical yoga practice has done for a lot of people. So you're going to make two columns, and one column is Swadharma. So it's Svadh. I'm so glad I get to write Arma. If you ever take a training with me, you'll learn that I am a horrible speller. And it like is so embarrassing sometimes. And then Paradharma, Paradharma. And you don't even have to write the Sanskrit. You could write in English. The first is inherent to, or one's own. I like those words, like inherent to or one's own. And then Paradharma is alien to. I also use the phrase that my teacher used. It's not like a descript. It's not like a noun, but it's fraught with fear. So I sort of put those two things. It's inherent to or one's own, alien to or fraught with fear. So those are your two categories. And then you just, what I'd like you to do is spend some time, let's say 30 seconds. You can pause and do this longer. And let's start with what you're not. I know that's so obvious, and there's sort of like everybody says it. Like sometimes you have to know what you're not in order to know what you are. So think of things that you, this is why fraught with fear is so helpful. What makes you sort of fraught with fear? It could be a skill set, it could be a profession. It could be maybe a value, like dishonesty. And let's just sort of start there. And then while Hallie's working on that, I'll just say that this is sort of the first stage and step of discovery. If you already feel like I already know who I am, there's always a refinement of that. And then I would encourage you to do it in the early morning when your mind is quieter, before you turn on your phone or your computer. That's really important that there's nothing that's it's called mahat. Mahat is environmental pressures. So you're trying to sort of be in a space where there's no environmental pressure, social pressure, parental pressure to decide your nature. And then on the other side, Hal, take some time to do what's inherent to you. Is it a skill? It could be a profession, a quality. I love writing down values, like in this one, values, living a value-driven life versus a goal-driven life. I can hear your pen moving furiously on your page.
You said values versus goals. Talk to me
Yes.
about that.
Oh man. So we have actually again, I really, even on podcasts, I try not to add things in time because then it feels irrelevant, but potentially we'll post it on the on-demand platform. We're working, if you go onto our on-demand platform, there's a guy on there named John Evans. He does ACT, acceptance commitment therapy. And he and I have talked on our podcast extensively about the difference between living a values-driven life versus a goals-driven life. And goals have outcomes. They're usually like, they can, whenever you have an outcome and you want to get something, just from a philosophical perspective, it's a modified desire, which then desire modified in terms of a goal typically modifies as to in fear. So then you have anxiety around, am I going to get it? Am I not going to get it? Whereas when you live a values-driven life, you're very clear, they become your compass, and anything that you do that aligns with your value is in some ways an achievement. So he gave me the example that I absolutely loved, which was if your goal is to go to Sacramento, California, across the country, every turn that you make relatively it becomes, it has to be more precise and more meaningful. And then you're like, oh, we're going the wrong way. Let's say you go south, you're going towards Florida because you made a wrong turn. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, wrong way, wrong way, wrong way. Whereas if your goal, your intention, let's say, is to travel west, you open up this like world of, okay, take a step west in any way. Like there's a vast way that you can go west. And that is makes your life more relaxed. You are always in alignment, pretty much. And to me, that's a really important thing. And I can give you I'll give you an example after we sort of talk about this of how my team gets very confused by how I do this, and then they get it once I explain it to them. But it really works. So, Hal, do you want to list off what's alien to you? What's inherent to you?
Oh, goodness, sharing. Okay.
Yeah, sharing. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Come on. So,
fraught with fear, I wrote, like, highly technical expectations. Like, I fear, yeah, I don't know. Highly
great.
Like, very deeply mathy. Like, distrust. And feeling, like, very compromised, I wrote down.
Okay.
When you're in situations where you have to continuously compromise like important parts of yourself.
Ooh, interesting. So you would never choose a job for money over values.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that would be, interesting.
I don't think so.
Maybe.
You say never and I'm like, I don't know. I'd have to see the job, but like, probably not.
Well, maybe it would be short term. And then do you have any do you have any skills that you feel are sort of alien to you? More technical skills? I can give you an example if you want an example.
Like if I was the last person on earth to make you a pivot Excel sheet, it would
perfect.
Not be me.
Okay, so that's exactly that kind of me either. So that would be in yours. Like if I was hired by California Closets, I would be like somebody like this is not it. Like I will not survive here. Like I will survive 15 minutes in your organization. Like, so that's like very paradigmic. Whereas what is inherent to you?
I wrote down communication. I mean, I didn't know I was going to share these. So these were like symbolic in my head. I wrote down environmental.
That's fine.
Uh-huh. So like small footprint, big impact type of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote down like outspoken.
Okay. Great. That's great. That's like sort of like you pioneering. I love how you're like, I didn't think I was going to share these. You're funny. So from there, what somebody could do is sort of like write down like what professions, what organizations, sort of like a branding exercise for your personal self, you know, what organizations align with you. What colors? You could put it in any abstract way, any concrete way. And then let's take teaching yoga, since, you know, this is more of a yoga podcast. Let's take teaching yoga as an example. And this is what I do with the 200-hour and 300-hour as just like a launching point of like how important it is to find your personal mission. Take a moment, if you're listening, to write your personal mission. And what I would encourage you all to think about is that if you're teaching yoga, most people will say things like, my mission is to heal people the way yoga healed me. And I'm like, come on, what else do you have to say other than that? There is more to why. Like, what is your journey? Why did you get unhealed? Where was the crack in your life? Be specific about your mission, because guess what? In a time like a pandemic, when you have four people in your class with masks on, you're going to say all the conditions say to me that this is no longer a way that I can help people, and you'll lose your trajectory. And so the more precise you can be with why, how, that will become this, then you write out values for it. Like, okay, well, if my mission at Citizen Yoga, my mission is to use the platform of yoga as a mechanism to create a true community to help people with their mental health and prevent suicide, prevent them from feeling alone. How can I do that? There are so many ways I can learn people's names. Now it just starts to drip into our customer service. When you walk through the door, people have to stand up. They look you in the eye. Now, of course, it's harder for people, right? This requires our front desk people to be very confident. And I think that they go through their own sort of confidence journey of how do I talk to adults? Oh my God, this is so scary. But the idea is that your personal mission then becomes a values exercise that you can demonstrate how you can live a more purposeful life within your areas of obligation. So once you have that mission, why is your mission just during yoga? Then how do you live that mission as a parent, as a friend? Like, I think that what happens is in the yoga industry is you isolate these missions as a yoga teacher in the yoga space, and then you're a complete asshole everywhere else.
Yeah, like it's good that you set an intention for an hour, but what are you doing the other 23 hours of every day?
Exactly. And that's what I saw as a kid. It was like, woo-woo, breathe, feel your body, like let's all be together and hold hands. And then the guy would walk out of the room and he'd be like a complete a-hole. That was my childhood in yoga. And like all this crazy stuff was going on. And so I saw that disconnect. And so what I would encourage everybody to do right now is like, if you feel depressed, particularly right now, I understand. Like, I understand. I was also in a dark place during COVID. I'm not a perfect person. I lost my vision, like my right eye, like I can't see. And what I would say is that I've always defined depression as an over-concentration of selfish thought. And actually, I was listening to David Ching on, I think he was on NPR, and he was talking about his own journey with depression and how you become so self-focused. And so this is really an exercise. I could guide you through a meditation and you would have some relief for 3 minutes, maybe five. But hopefully what this exercise can help you do is have long-term relief of, okay, like, where is my compass? Where am I going and why? And why is it important?
And I think people sometimes, and myself included, you know, there's an attraction to something short because it feels like a quick fix. Like, oh, if only I just meditate for a few minutes every day, you know, things will get better. And maybe they will. But yeah. I think what you're saying is that, like, sometimes your life needs to change, and identifying what is the value guiding the changes can be really empowering if you're able to, you know, determine what is truly important to you.
Yes. And just to add on to that, thanks, Hal, that was beautiful. And just to add on to that, like, mindfulness is wonderful because I sort of call it a recalibration coping skill. Mm-hmm. But this is a like bigger, like, how do you get oriented? Like, if you're disoriented and you're not going in the right direction, it doesn't matter how much mindfulness and yoga you do. And one thing I will clarify to say is that changing your attitude can be as powerful as changing your actions. So you don't have to reinvent your life. You have to reinvent your attitude. You have to reinvent the why behind why you're doing it, because you can't stop being a mom or a girlfriend. You can stop being a girlfriend. You can't, you know, you can break up friendships, but the truth is you can change your job, but oftentimes you're running from the same person that's going to create the same mess. And so,
which is sometimes me, like, maybe it's you that you need to confront, because you'll be there anywhere you go.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So I just want to say to people, like, to reorient your life doesn't mean you always have to change your circumstances. It just puts you deeper into the center of your circumstances.
Which is, again, about that outlook and that vision and like that ability, I think, to be imaginative and to see possibility sometimes is a big part of the reason why I may feel like I don't know where I'm going. You know, you have to lift that veil of like, you know, this isn't going to work or whatever, and just entertain the possibility that something might. So like, what might it look like if there were options on the table?
Yeah. And I can tell you the on-demand platform, honestly, I was so like, no, you know. And I like feel so hopeful again. And like, oh my God, I can touch people's lives. And our team is so amazing. I have to tell you, it's like they're like, we're like fantasy land, yoga land. Like, we all love each other so much. And like, it doesn't mean that we're like, la-di-da, hold hands, best friends. It's like, just a mutual respect for each other. And I'm so excited to share their knowledge with the world. And I took a risk, you know, it was a big financial risk in a moment that we didn't know what was going to happen. And I feel so grateful for it, however it happens. But I think we're going to continue to improve the platform and add to it. And I think it's open your mind. That's what I had to do. Like, I thought Citizen was going to expand as a brick and mortar company. And I still think we could one day. But I think that this is just a different avenue.
Definitely. Casey, I have loved getting to talk with you about your mission and your business and these reflective questions, and just a lot of, I feel like I'm going to enjoy listening to this again as well. Is there anything that you want to share in closing to wrap it up?
Well, I feel like, honestly, I think you did such a beautiful job guiding the conversation. So I just want to acknowledge that. That you really did such a beautiful job guiding the conversation. And I also want to acknowledge, you know, what you did for us. Manduka sponsored a class during the pandemic for us. And it sounds so silly. There were like 500 people pre-registered for class, which, you know, each year we do yoga at the big house and we have 2,000 people. So I've really like learned a tolerance for big classes, and it was so fun. And we gained all these students who follow us regularly, who started taking our teacher trainings. And I just wanted to acknowledge what an amazing thing that was for our studio in a moment where we were in stress and there was so much unknown and fear, and it was a financial benefit. It was a student long-term benefit. And it was also just really nice that people reached out to believe in us during that time. So I just wanted to acknowledge that.
That was our pleasure. I'm so grateful that that was so impactful. And I certainly think most of it was because you are such a strong teacher and such an amazing studio. Thanks, you so much again for joining me. And I will drop some information in the show notes with resources for folks to find you. Would you like to share your social media or website, whatever?
Yeah. So my Instagram, is I Am Citizen Yoga. Our regular Instagram is Citizen Yoga. And then our website is citizenyogastudio.com. And then the on-demand platform is ondemand.citizenyogastudio.com. You get 7-day free trial. It's $18 a month. We try to make it really affordable so people could have mental health and yoga in an accessible way for them. And I also think that that was a response to COVID. So please explore, tell us what you want, request content. I love creating content. So anything you guys want, I'm open to creating.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time today. And for our listeners, all of Casey and Citizen Yoga's information will be linked in the show notes. So be sure to check them out and take a class. And thank you all for listening. I hope to see you again soon.